The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, May 27th. Welcome to TalkBack. I'm Peter Christian. That is Mr. Nick Christensen over there taking your phone calls and producing TalkBack. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
And we are always privileged to have with us a semi-regular co-host, if you might call him that, Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council. And you have special guests. We're talking about energy today.
Yeah, this is a program I've been looking forward to. The timing of it could not be better or more important. You guys are statewide, so what we're going to be discussing today is something that everyone in this audience needs to kind of step back, grab that cup of coffee, and listen to the two truly international and domestic experts that we have on the show today, starting with Robert Bryce, who has agreed to take some time with us today for the first hour, calling from, of all places, Texas,
the heart of it.
Yeah, right. So, Peter, if you want to do a brief introduction of Robert and his background, we have him for a precious hour, so we want to get started.
You bet. Robert Bryce is an author, speaker, and film producer. He's been writing about energy, power, politics, and innovation for more than three decades. Also the acclaimed author of six books, including most recently A Question of Power, Electricity, and the Wealth of Nations. Bryce has given more than 550 invited or keynote lectures to groups ranging from the Marine Corps War College to the Sydney Institute, as well as a wide variety of associations, universities, and corporations. Former staff writer at the Austin Chronicle and former managing editor of Energy Tribune, his articles have appeared in dozens of publications, including The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, The Hill, and The Guardian.
So Robert, I'm going to introduce this to you because this is something happening in real time in Montana. You want to be talking about natural gas prices and, of course, input fertilizer costs. Eastern Montana and a good part of our state is going through a pretty bad drought. This morning, we had temperatures out in the eastern part in the 90s, even hitting 100. They're expecting very high winds. This is the worst combination of weather conditions right now for a place that did not have a lot of moisture this winter. On top of that, Robert, take it away when it comes to introducing your topic now.
Well, there's plenty to talk about. And, you know, I love the farmers and ranchers. They're some of my favorite people. As I like to say, they're the world's most miserable optimists. and I've never met one of them who's ever made a dime. You always ask them about their business. How's business? Oh, it's bad. You know, how's prices are down. What about the cattle? Oh, they're just pets. You know, they all sing from the same woe hymnal of woe. But this time, I was in Wyoming last month and speaking to Wyrelec, of electric cooperative there. And the pain is real in the ag world, you know, whether it's the drought, and that's similar in Montana, it's similar in Wyoming. We've been going through a long drought here in Texas. But now you add in the shocks from the war in Iran, you know, diesel prices are up. There was a hearing, in fact, the Senate, I'll just touch on the fertilizer prices and so on. But the inputs for ag, you know, the ag producers, they're getting killed here. Joshua Westling spoke or testified in front of the Senate. He's a fertilizer guy. He's building a fertilizer plant in Nebraska. I'll read directly what he said from his testimony. We've seen since the beginning of the war, we've seen a 33% rise in anhydrous prices, 55% rise in urea, 25% increase in liquid nitrogen, 5% in DAP, and 3% in potash. At the same time, farm diesel prices have surged 72%, increasing the cost of field work, fertilizer, transportation, and irrigation. So, you know, it's no secret that, you know, the farmers and ranchers, they're hurting. And this is, you know, for all the talk about, you know, politicians caring about what happens in ag world, you know, these prices are very, very difficult for the farmers and ranchers.
We are coming up against a hard break. Our guest right now, Robert Bryce, author, speaker, and film producer. Of course, Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us. We're going to come right back. The Montana World Affairs Council continues talking about energy today. We'll be back right after this quick timeout on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
If you're ready for a real...
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. A slight chance of rain again Wednesday afternoon with thunderstorms developing after 3 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with highs rebounding into the low to mid-80s. A 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms into the evening with lows around 50. The chance of rain will persist again Thursday as conditions remain unsettled. And again, that could bring afternoon thunderstorms, especially with the heat climbing back to around 90 degrees. Partly cloudy and a chance of rain Thursday night. Cooler with a chance of showers Friday.
Back. This is Talk Back with us Wednesday, May 27th. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen producing Talk Back, taking your phone calls. Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us. And special guest on the phone is Robert Bryce.
So, Robert, prior to the break, you just gave a string of explanation in terms of the effects of what we're seeing that ultimately go into the cost of fertilizers. Can you give a little bit more background and depth as to the specifics and why we are currently in this situation right now?
Sure, it's the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, full stop. That you have, 20% of phosphate fertilizer transits the Strait of Hormuz. This is globally. 50% of the sulfur, 20% of the ammonia, 30% of the urea. You know, the Gulf states are huge producers of fertilizer and the constituents that go into fertilizer. And then you add in now the blockade, the blockade now preventing that percentage, those percentages of world supply from transiting the strait. And you have the massive increase in oil prices due to the blockade. That is why we're seeing the higher diesel prices, but it's, you know, these are going to be inflationary across the board, but it's all back to the war in Iran.
So how much is there still an after effect of Russia invasion of Ukraine? Because we saw this effect immediately as Ukraine is a major exporter of some of the things that you described.
Sure.
Excuse me.
So, well, right. And the Russian crude, Russian refining, the Ukrainians have been hitting Russian refineries. That has meant a reduction in the production of sulfur because refiners produce a lot of sulfur to produce cleaner refined products. So, yeah, these implications and the reverberations, the knock-on effects of all of these things are reverberating throughout the global economy in multiple commodity sectors.
So as we think about this, I had said to you off-air, the premise is that structurally – we've taken about 1 billion barrels of oil off the markets. Now, initially, you would have thought the markets would have reacted a lot more violently to that in terms of pricing, but it was relatively muted. Yes, we did see an increase, but not to the degree that one may have expected. And there's several reasons initially that happened. If you could maybe go into some detail as far as in the initial days, what was happening in the oil supply markets on a global basis? I kind of kept the lid on things for a little bit, but something is changing right now. And if I'm correct, it's pretty darn dramatic in terms of what we can be looking forward to in the future.
Well, let me take a different tack there, Bob, because it's important to remember that oil prices and commodity prices in general are always determined on the margin, right? With a
right.
marginal supply, right? You know, a difference in a few percentage points of supply or demand can drastically affect the price. So that's just fundamentally true. The issue in the global oil business now for a century has been not too little oil, but too much. And remember, just some history is relevant here. After the discovery of the East Texas field in the 1930s, there was a flood of oil into the market. Prices collapsed. Well, the producers got together and said, hey, we got to do something to stabilize prices. Well, that led to the empowerment of the Texas Railroad Commission. And the governor of Oklahoma, the governor of Texas got together. They got federal approval. And the Railroad Commission for 40 years, up until 1973, set allowables that reduced the supply of oil into the global market. Since 73, it's been OPEC. But now OPEC is falling apart because the UAE just bumped, just left. Well, so now we're facing a prospect where there are no governors, no cartels that are limiting the supply of oil into the marketplace. So your fundamental point is that, yes, oil prices are likely to stay higher than they have been, even if we open the Strait of Hormuz magically tomorrow. But once that happens, there is a massive amount of oil that is now trapped in the Persian Gulf. That's going to surge into the market, which will likely mean dramatically lower prices for a time. But I think that my fundamental point here is that oil prices are volatile. They're always volatile, and they always react and overreact to global political and political shocks and conflicts. And so, what I'm, you know, the point to keep in mind here is that the world has always had not too little oil, but too much. And so, if you're going to get long on oil, be careful because you might well get burned.
So, the estimates of oversupply were part of 2005, moving into 2006. There are some out there that are saying, well, the IEA and others have overestimated the amount of excess. And now combining that with what we're seeing happening with the Strait being closed, we're going through a lot of our strategic reserves at the current time. Is it possible that somebody is wrong about the amount of oil that exists out there that is not just in the ground, but actually has to be extracted and is deliverable?
Well, I'll put it this way, Bob. Everybody is always wrong.
Okay.
If I knew how to predict prices on oil, I'd be a rich man. I'd own half of Montana. I'd own more of Montana than Ted Turner.
Sure.
But God rest his soul. But, I mean, look, there are all these predictions. The IEA has notoriously been wrong over and over.
Right.
Well known. So what we have seen is that the oil majors, some of the big oil companies, they're making a lot of money right now. But those margins always get squeezed. So I'm being careful in what I say here because I've looked at these markets for a long time and, you know, do I know what's coming? I have no idea. And no one else does either.
So a premise is if oil gets to 120, 130 bucks, of course, the energy companies are going to make lots of money. And when we get back from a break, I'll finish the question and you can elaborate on it.
You bet.
Thank
you. Our guest here in the studio, of course, is Bob Seidenschwartz of the Montana World Affairs Council. On the phone is Robert Bryce, author, speaker, and film producer. We're talking about energy and specifically what's going on or not going on or through the Strait of Hormuz. And we do have a caller waiting. We'll try to get to her call as quickly as we can at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks so much for joining us on this Wednesday edition of Talk Back on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You've just had an act.
Women experience unique life stages such as pregnancy or menopause that can increase their risk of developing cardiovascular disease over the course of their lifetime.
But here's the good news. Women have the best resource.
We have each other.
Visit goredforwomen.org today to learn more.
Parents have a lot to get done in a day.
Sit tight, hon. I'll be right back.
But even when we're rushed, always remember, temperatures as low as 60 degrees can be deadly for children left in the car. Every time you park the car, stop, look, lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey, we are back on Talk Back, the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Of course, Bob Seidenschwartz joining us here in the studio this morning. Our special guest on the phone is Robert Bryce, author, speaker, and film producer. We're talking about energy, and we have folks on the line who want to, with questions or comments. So, Nancy, you're up first. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Gloria. Good morning, Bob, and good morning, Robert. We always seem to adapt to these kind of situations, and you know, in Iran, this is something that our country had to do in order for self-defense. And I know the thing that's bothering me mostly right now is Iran. They will not shut off their oil pumps, their oil rigs, Now they're dumping the extra oil into the ocean. And, of course, without clean water, planet Earth is going to die. And that's got me worried. But they refuse to cooperate with the United States. And I don't know, sooner or later this is going to have to come to President Trump doing what needs to be done to the country of Iran to get things going again. But I have heard predictions that gas is going to be as low as $2 and maybe 58 cents by late autumn. So I don't like what's going on, but it has to be done. And so I'd like to hear what you think about what we can do with Iran to get them to cooperate more.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Robert, please.
You're welcome.
I have absolutely no idea. I mean, yeah. I don't think Trump does either. You know, look at Hamas in Gaza. They're still fighting now. What, 3 years later, they haven't given up. What I fear is that this conflict is just going to drag on and on. You know, the Iranians they have a strong bargaining position here. And it, you know, if I'm looking at this as just as detached as I can be, you know, Trump is desperate to get a deal done, right? And he thought this was going to be quick and easy and, you know, the Iranians are going to roll over. And I just don't see that happening. Now, could I be proven wrong? I hope I'm wrong, but still, you know, it's these prices have gone up quickly. They're going to come down slowly.
Yeah, and Robert, I would make a slightly bold observation that right now Iran may have some advantages that did not exist prior to the start of the war. And as has been pointed out on this show we have several experts here in our community, these are folks that play the long game. We have elections that come up every couple of years, and right now the regime that's in place is a bit more hardline, very likely, than what it replaced. So this thing, as you point out, may have a lot more legs to it and a lot more twists and turns. And Nancy, to the point that gas is going to be at $2.58, that would be wonderful. I would be betting on the other side of the coin on that one, though.
I would as well, and I'll just remember during the Afghanistan war, there's one line that stuck out, where the Afghanis or the people on the opposite side, whoever, you know, the U.S. was fighting there, they said, yeah, the Americans have all the clocks, but we have all the time.
Yeah. You know, and Nancy said something, too, that caught my attention when she said that they're still pumping oil. Robert, explain to the rest of us that wells are not something that you just turn on and off like a light switch. These are delicate pieces of geology and machinery, so there may be specific reasons, and that goes to the infrastructure that's been damaged. So a little insight on that, please.
Sure. Well, the caller said that the Iranians are dumping oil into the ocean. I've never heard that, and I do have very, very serious doubts that that's true. It would make no sense whatsoever. But second, yes, you know, oil and gas wells, they are designed to produce, and they are best when they are maintained at certain pressures and constant pressures, and that's their sweet spot. So to shut them in, which is what could happen if this, and I think in some cases is already happening in the Middle East, if they get shut in, then those wells can be damaged. And I'm no geologist, no petroleum engineer, but these are serious concerns.
Okay. Yeah, I would imagine that as we look at what's going on in the Middle East right now, the just the sheer tension of all this has got to be tough on markets and tough on individuals.
Well, sure, let's step back and ignore the U.S., ignore the, you know, European countries, ignore the Middle Eastern countries, the Gulf countries. Who's going to get hit hardest by what we're seeing now? Well, it's always the poor, yeah. Right? You know, mm-hmm. It's always the low-income people. They always get hurt the worst. And high energy prices are the enemy of the poor, full stop. High energy prices, high costly energy is the enemy of the poor. So who will suffer the most due to high fertilizer prices, potentially lower food production. It's going to be, you know, you name it, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sub-Saharan Africa, you know, the rural areas in India. This is obvious.
We're coming up against a break. Robert, our special guest on the phone, Robert Bryce, author, speaker, and film producer. Of course, Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us this morning, the Montana World Affairs Council. We're talking about oil and energy and the Middle East and all that. That always seems to rise to the top of the headlines. So we're going to continue. We have folks waiting. Dave, Catherine, and Jeff are all waiting to visit with you, sir. We're going to come right back. Our phone numbers are 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Again, you're listening to Talk Back right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. A slight chance of rain again Wednesday afternoon with thunderstorms developing after 3 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with highs rebounding into the low to mid-80s. A 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms into the evening with lows around 50. The chance of rain will persist again Thursday as conditions remain unsettled. And again, that could bring afternoon thunderstorms, especially with the heat climbing back to around 90 degrees. Partly cloudy and a chance of rain Thursday night. Cooler with a chance of showers Friday.
Childhood cancer is the leading cause of death by disease for children in our country. We can do something about that. We can come together to support Children's Cancer Research Fund, a national nonprofit dedicated to ending childhood cancer. Because
it's enough already.
Go to childrenscancer.org.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
Hey, we're back. Welcome back to Talk Back. On this Wednesday, May 27th, Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls, and Bob Seidenschwartz joining us here in the studio this morning. Robert Bryce joining us on the phone, author, speaker, and film producer, and folks have been waiting to talk with you, sir. Dave, good morning, you're on.
You know, first about the war, from experts I've listened to, not the politicians, but the experts, that this all didn't have to happen if they left inspectors in, but in Iran. But about oil, from what I've read, China sits on the world's largest accessible reserves right now at 1.4 billion barrels. And they're actually giving some of that oil to their neighbors who aren't lucky enough to have these reserves available and getting a lot of money from it. But the U.S. reserve could have been up to 700 million barrels, but when this started, it was way down, and it is shrinking fast. It's fastly dropping to a quarter of what was supposed to be in there, and it looks like it's on its way to zero. What do you say to that?
Thanks, Dave.
Well, if I'm hearing the question correctly, the caller is saying that China has huge oil reserves and the U.S. reserves are running out. I'll just put it this way. Whatever oil is in the ground isn't worth anything unless it can be brought to the surface. And so, you know, China or whoever might have massive reserves, but unless they can get it out, then it doesn't matter at all. What we know is the U.S. reserves of hydrocarbons, whether it's coal, oil, or natural gas, are substantial. What the U.S. has that essentially no other country in the world has is a combination of rigs, rednecks, and rights. We have the drilling technology and the rigs. We have the rednecks. We have the workforce that knows how to operate them. And we have private ownership of mineral rights. And the combination of all of those, and I'd add rocks, we have good geology. Those four things matter enormously. And so that's why the U.S., even though we have far smaller natural gas resources than, say, Iran, we're producing more natural gas than any other country in the world by far. In fact, we're producing more than Iran, Qatar, Canada, Norway, and Saudi Arabia combined. I mean, it's so Yeah, but yes, resources matter, but technology matters more.
All right, let's get go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, I think Dave was referring to the strategic reserves that China has as the strategic reserves that the U.S., not the potential, as you said, Robert, in the ground.
Yeah. Well, that's fair, and having oil in storage matters, and that was one of the reasons why we created the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, after the oil shocks of the 1970s. So that those reserves matter, those that oil in storage matters. It's one of the reasons why the oil prices have been fairly moderated. They haven't been prevented from rising, but remember the IEA coordinated this massive release of what was 300-400 million barrels into the marketplace. So Canada's oil reserves matter as well because they help forestall any potential shortages in the market.
Well, let's get one more call in before we take a break. Catherine, quickly, what's your question?
Yeah, good morning. The Strait of Hormuz is bordered by the UAE and Oman, in addition to Iran. And Iran is asserting control over the entire strait. What are the UAE and Oman doing in reaction to that, because Iran is affecting their economies also?
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, this is a good point. And what these countries are doing, all of the countries in the region, is they're looking at ways to export their commodities over land, either in trucks or in pipelines. So this is ongoing. And one of the results of this war is going to be a broader diversification of transportation and a lot of onshoring.
Yeah. So, Robert, we can talk about that later. We're going to have to go to a break here. But Catherine brings up something that, when all is said and done, there's going to be a lot of recalibration of how we do our business, where we get the oil in terms of which direction it goes. So this game is just getting started, and the implications are going to be generational in terms of what happens next.
This is a fascinating, very, very educational hour we're having so far with Robert Bryce. Learning a lot. Hope you're taking notes. There will be a test after. No, just kidding. We're going to come right back. Jeff is waiting very patiently to visit with you. Robert Bryce is joining us on the phone, author, speaker, and film producer. Of course, Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us from the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. And we really appreciate his input on these shows. So we still have several phone lines open. If you have a question or a comment, please feel free to give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And again, you're listening to Talk Back on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll return with our conversation with Robert Bryce right after this quick timeout. So please stay with us.
Every weekend, Diane Beck and Becky Peterson, the Beck and Beck team at Windermere Real Estate, present Missoula Real Estate Today on News Talk KGVO. The Beck and Beck team provides years of local experience for your real estate transaction and bring you guests that provide useful information on products and services available in our community on Missoula Real Estate Today. Saturday mornings from 8 till 8:30 and replayed Sunday mornings from 10:30 till 11 on News Talk KGVO, FM 98.3 and AM 1290, and on the free KGVO mobile app.
This is our shared heritage, but today we're divided, except for our love of wildlife and wild places they and we call home. We are closer than you think. Learn more at defenders.org.
Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday edition of Talk Back. I'm Peter Christian, Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls. Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us with the Montana World Affairs Council. Our guest on the phone, Robert Bryce, author, speaker, and film producer. And we have a caller who's been waiting through the break. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for holding. Oh, hey, Jeff, good morning. You're on Talk Back.
Hey, good morning, gents. Good morning, Robert. It's great to talk to you again. I think this is the first time you've been on this program, at least the third time you've been here, at least in my memory. I found out about you here, and I actually emailed you once when I heard you were born in Billings, only I found out that it was Billings, Oklahoma, not Billings, Montana. So, you and Dr. Roger Pilkey Jr. are my two favorite energy folks. There's others out there that I admire as well, Judith Curry, but you guys tell it as it is. You pull no punches, but you do it in an honest way. Before you started your Substack, I used to follow you on the Power Hungry podcast, and that was a wonderful platform. That's where I learned about your two documentaries, Juice, and I think Juiced Up, if I remember right, and all the other videos that you've done out there that people need to go out and take a look at, giving you a shameless plug because you deserve it. But on that podcast, some of those episodes have disappeared, at least in the Apple store. And on one of them, you interviewed a young farmer from, I think, Uganda, who was trying to just make a living. And Uganda is rich in natural gas. And unfortunately, natural gas is taken out of the country by Germany and turned into fertilizer and then brought back, I believe. And that's where I first heard about this green colonialism or energy colonialism. And first of all, if I could get the name of that farmer, because I want to try to follow him again, and I don't remember what it was. And also talk about that green colonialism, about how the wealthier countries exploit the non-wealthy countries rather than letting them develop, helping them develop their own infrastructure, energy infrastructure. They basically take it out and use it for their own purposes.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Jeff.
Well, that's very kind of you to call, and thanks for your kind comments. Yes, it was now 3 years ago, and I appreciate your comments on the Power Hungry podcast. I did it for 4 years and did over 200 episodes, and then I decided to declare victory and stop. But I did interview Jesper Machogu. He's a Kenyan farmer, and that podcast is available on YouTube, so you can find that pretty easily. It's Jesper, J-U-S-P-E-R. Machogu, M-A-C-H-O-G-U, and he's a very compelling guy, very interesting guy, very friendly, but, very clear-headed and clear-eyed about the importance of hydrocarbons to humanity, and particularly to people like him who are, working in subsistence farming, and I can't imagine working as hard as he does. I mean, the stories that he tells, and he has a YouTube channel, I think he's on Instagram, TikTok, and the rest, but he walks miles upon miles without even thinking about it. I mean, the amount of physical of work that he does and the people like him that they do I don't think side shorts would last but a couple of minutes. I'm doing that kind of thing myself.
Hey, you have no idea what I used to do walking to school.
No. So, yes, thank you. That's very kind.
So, Robert, our time is getting precious here, so I want to introduce King Cole, the mother of the Industrial Revolution. You've got some articles right now that you're writing. So please tell us a little bit about what you're doing and your insights on coal currently.
Thank you, yes. A few years ago, I coined what I call the Iron Law of Electricity, which says people, countries, and businesses will do whatever they have to do to get the electricity they need. And why is it relevant now? Well, the Iron Law is showing yet again that it's relevant today. Why? Because all over the world, we're seeing, again, record consumption of coal. And why is that? Because we've seen a spike in the price of LNG coming into the global market due to the war in Iran. So what's the short answer? What's the short point about coal? Coal hasn't gone away. Despite hundreds of millions of dollars that U.S. NGOs like Bloomberg Philanthropies, Sierra Club, Earth Justice, the others fighting coal in the United States, all around the world, coal is the key fuel for electricity generation, and it's having a resurgence again today because of the war in Iran.
So you take a country like China, leads the world in developing renewables or moving in that direction. I brought up earlier to you that the input source, the feedstock, is coal. So China's using massive amounts of coal to go green, which, you know, coining the phrase, you got to go brown before you go green. So help people understand, as much as we know the implications, but you brought up something that's so critical. People have to have affordable energy to run their country, to run their homes. And if they don't, you've got a problem. So what is this look like right now in terms of, you said coal demand is going up. Specifically, where in the world is it going up?
We got about a minute and a half in this segment. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, China is, of course, the world's largest coal consumer. It uses more coal than all the rest of the countries of the world combined. Further, quick fact, China is now building over 200 gigawatts of new coal-fired capacity. Once it completes those additional gigawatts, so 200 gigawatts, China's coal fleet, its coal fleet alone, will be larger than the entire generation fleet in the United States. It'll be about 1.4 terawatts. So, one of the things I said when we were on break is you don't build solar panels with solar panels. The solar panels that, you know, Bill McKibben and all these green activists, climate activists are so happy about talking about, they're built with coal-fired power in China. That's the real story.
Wow.
So, Peter, we got to go to a break here?
In about less than a minute.
Okay. So when you're talking about then coal production, does China have enough coal internally? Or as we here in Montana, we see coal trains going through Missoula
every
on an
day.
Ongoing basis. That coal's going out of the West Coast and it's going to Asia. So does China import a lot of its coal? Or is it self-sustaining?
We're going to get that answer when we come back from the break. Again, our guest on the phone, we deeply appreciate his time, Robert Bryce, author, speaker, and film producer, talking about energy with Bob Seidenschwartz of the Montana World Affairs Council. And we have Skip waiting to visit with you when we come back from the break. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Talk Back here on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Just cream.
Hey, thanks for joining us on this Wednesday edition of Talk Back. I'm Peter Christian, Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls. Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council here in the studio with us. And we're talking with Robert Bryce, author, speaker, and film producer. And Skip has been waiting very patiently. So, Skip, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Peter. And waiting is no problem. It's a wonderful bunch of stuff that everybody's learning. I missed the first 10 minutes of the program, so I maybe you've already been asked this. And it has to do with our oil reserves. Do you know, sir, of anything we're doing to really get those back up to snuff? Because our oil reserves are very highly depleted, and we need to be doing something so we don't get caught with our pants down. Can you bring us up to date,
Skip,
and give us some quick notes?
Skip, I think you're describing our strategic reserves. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. I'll let Robert answer the question.
Thanks, Skip.
Well, if we're talking about the SPR, the Biden administration how they manipulated that to keep prices down was, I think, just a really foolish move strategically. But if we're talking about reserves in the ground, I'll just point out that despite this continuing production of oil in the United States, the actual amount of proved oil reserves in the U.S. continues to go up. It's remarkable. The more oil we find, the more oil we find.
Okay. So, Skip, thank you for your question. Robert, we've got about 5 minutes left, so I'd like you to give us an update on some of the things. I know you're working on some coal articles. Anything else that you want to message to our audience? Also, where can they follow you or become a part of your Substack? So, please, let us know.
Sure. Well, thanks. RobertBryce.substack.com. I hope I mentioned RobertBryce.substack.com. That's where I write almost exclusively now. One of the things we haven't talked about is natural gas prices, and this is one of the other things that I've been focused on and writing quite a bit about. And it's important to remember, we've talked about oil prices, we've talked about fertilizer, but the U.S. consumer has been largely insulated on the natural gas front because the U.S. is such a massive producer of gas, which I talked about earlier. So to give you an idea why this matters, for industry in Asia, for industry in Europe, for consumers, you know, residential users in Asia and Europe that are dependent on imported natural gas, they've seen huge increases in prices. So TTF is the European marker. It's the equivalent of Henry Hub in Europe. Prices at TTF in Holland are up 62% since the war started. JKM, which is the Japan-Korea marker in Asia, are up 74%. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., the Henry Hub marker is up 5%. Today, natural gas spot price is under $3 per million BTU. In Asia, it's $18. In Europe, it's $16. So this is an incredible advantage for the U.S. consumer. It's a deflationary force in the economy and one that I think justifiably you can say that this cheap natural gas has been one of the reasons why the U.S. economy has been so resilient. We depend, you know, we produce more than 40% of our power from gas. And so the ability of the fact that we can outproduce every other country in the world by far is a strategic and economic advantage that no other country can match.
Now, Robert, is this TFN? Is this till further notice? Or do you see looking down the future and seeing some trouble ahead?
Well, again, Peter, if I could predict the price of natural gas, I'd own your radio station,
right,
your house.
Yes, sir.
I'd be leasing your car to you, and I'd be richer than Bob Seidenschwartz. But, you know, there are a lot of things happening in the gas market, and one of the things is, of course, the increased use of gas for power burn, for AI, and then, of course, LNG exports. And mm-hmm. both of those are driving up consumption of the gas that's being produced here in the U.S. What I'm loath to do, and I've cautioned before, is to bet against the drillers because they've become so efficient at producing more and more hydrocarbons. But I do think that there is, and this is something my brother Wally and I love my brother dearly, he's always saying, well, natural gas prices have to go up. And I'm saying, well, have to is a strong analysis because so far they haven't. And so there's going to be more demand. There will also be more supply. Will they stay in balance? We'll see.
So, Robert, in the brief minutes left, I listened to your interview. You did an interview with two energy experts on nuclear energy. You moderated the discussion. I listened to the entirety for about an hour. Fascinating. Where could people listen to that if they want to learn more?
Sure. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That was last month. I moderated a panel at Southern Methodist University in Dallas with Jim Burke, who's the CEO of Vistra, one of the biggest independent power producers in the U.S., and Ray Rothrock, who's a veteran investor in the nuclear space, former nuclear engineer, is a nuclear engineer, a very savvy investor. And we talked about what's happening in the nuclear energy sector in the United States, what they think is happening, going to happen next. Mm. And Burke was very clear-eyed, of course, because he manages about 50 gigawatts of generation capacity. But it was a very good conversation, and I was very happy with how it came out because, one, both of those guys are really smart, and also we covered a lot of territory in about 50 minutes. So
Robert,
can read that on my website or on robertprice.substack.com.
Sounds good. We are completely out of time. Thank you for sharing your expertise with us. We're going to come right back after the top of the hour. Jennifer Warren from Concept Elemental is going to be joining us in the next hour, along with Bob Seidenschwartz, the Montana World Affairs Council. We're going to come right back after the top of the hour news with another hour of talk back right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you along. Hour number two of TalkBack for this Wednesday, May 27th, underway. Again, Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls, producing Talk Back. Our special guest expert here in the studio is Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council. And we have another special guest on the phone. It's Jennifer Warren. And if I may, we've got some great things to say about Jennifer. Hope she won't be too terribly embarrassed. But Jennifer has been involved in communication strategy and new frontier developments across decades. She's been at the forefront of important developments in energy and resources, infrastructure, and technology. She helps clients and organizations communicate the value of their offerings in projects, programs, or as an in-house partner. Thought leadership is a long-running aspect that shapes her approach. Utilizing her experience and network, she helps companies and institutions create value of real-world impact with boots-on-the-ground effort. That is a very small part of this bio. So, Jennifer, good morning and welcome back to Talk Back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. My favorite station.
Well, we are very lucky to have you here, Jennifer. Of course, you know we had Robert Bryce on the phone. So we're really just kind of teeing up our 2 hours here on very important topics that are going to touch on, already have, a number of issues relating to energy. You bring decades of experience, your writings, your in-person interviews. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about Concept Elemental. And Peter, yeah, go ahead, please.
Just real quickly, Jennifer, I want you to know that we have, since the last time we talked, we are now on a statewide radio network with lots of different stations in eastern Montana that haven't had a chance to hear from you or to become familiar with your work. So if you could share a little bit about yourself and a little bit of a bio so that our folks all across the state of Montana can understand what we're talking about.
Sure. So Concept Elemental is like my advisory communications consultancy, and that's where I do private client work. And I, had all sorts of clients. Recently I helped with a cybersecurity firm with some messaging and branding. One of my clients is a SMU Cox School of Business, and I helped develop their knowledge site back in 2003. And I still kind of the editor for that. So I do a lot of different things that can include a lot of due diligence, R&D, just a variety of projects. But I think what's really visible to people is some of my work with DCEO as a contributing editor in the energy space, and in the last several years in the AI and AI infrastructure space, i.e., data centers and what's happening there. I get to a lot of conferences. I meet a lot of leaders. I interview a lot of leaders. And so that's kind of the consultancy piece of that. Did you want me to?
Yeah, I know Jennifer, if you would please tell us about who you've had interviews with, some of the events that you attend and the importance of that. And I'm going to ask you to do that as we hold and go to a break right now, because it's a pretty extensive list.
Well, yeah, yes, indeed. And we have an entire hour with Jennifer. We're really looking forward to her perspectives. We had a perspective last hour, another expert perspective this hour. And so we're inviting everyone. If you have, once we get started with this conversation, I'm sure a lot of folks are going to have questions for you. So the phone lines will be open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Again, our guest here in the studio, Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council. And Jennifer Warren is joining us for this hour. She's with, as you just mentioned, Concept Elemental. We're looking forward to hearing more about that and a further description about that. So we're looking for your phone calls as well as we continue on with this very informative hour here on TalkBack. Again, the numbers are 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We appreciate you joining us here on the Montana World Affairs Council with the Montana Talks Radio Network. TalkBack is brought
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. A slight chance of rain again Wednesday afternoon with thunderstorms developing after 3 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with highs rebounding into the low to mid-80s. A 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms into the evening with lows around 50. The chance of rain will persist again Thursday as conditions remain unsettled. And again, that could bring afternoon thunderstorms, especially with the heat climbing back to around 90 degrees. Partly cloudy and a chance of rain Thursday night. Cooler with a chance of showers Friday.
Hey, we're back on TalkBack. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Peter Christian, Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls, producing TalkBack. Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council here in the studio. And we are delighted to have Jennifer Warren from Concept Elemental on the phone. So let's continue.
So, Jennifer, I'd asked you to give a little bit of your background in terms of you've done a lot of interviews from the Dallas Fed to, captains of industry. So give a little insight as to who some of these folks are and the work that you've done.
Right. So I've been going to a number of Fed conferences, Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And in one that I attended back in 2023 in May, this was a tech disruption conference. And this was right before the NVIDIA stock went, hyperbolic. And I heard from a semiconductor expert and an LLM expert, the models, and I understood that this is going to require a lot of energy. And I'd been writing about energy for like two decades because I chronicled all the shale booms from here in North Texas. And, we have the Permian, which is, the largest producer of oil, and all that is here. And so I've also simultaneously done a lot of work, R&D and writings and infrastructure, because it's kind of part and parcel of energy. You can't produce energy unless you move it with infrastructure. And there's, large investments in that. And so I think from this infrastructure lens, it has helped me to have context for this AI build out with data centers, AI infrastructure. But I had to really learn about more of the tech side of AI and how this technology has been diffusing. So really for the last 3 years, I would say I've really pounded the pavement and gone to, probably upwards of 20 conferences all around the country, including a lot of energy conferences. And in the last 2 years, there's been more, especially last year, there were more like, there was one conference at the Dallas Fed just this spring on powering AI. It was their first. And then I had been to one at the Ham Institute as well. And they probably were the inaugural powering AI summit, if you will. But I've been working on those features. And last year in November with DCEO, I did interview Jim Burke. It was really a story about how we're going to power all this new demand. And I also interviewed one of the co-CEOs of Energy Transfer, Mackie McRae. I interviewed a NeoCloud that's got a really large presence in North Dakota. And a NeoCloud is a type of AI infrastructure. But I had come out with two major works about all this, and in like March of 25, which I then toured Montana for World Affairs with y'all and talked about what I was working on, where I was really connecting all the energy situation and challenges with this data center build out, this AI infrastructure build out. But to understand that, you've also got to follow the tech. And I was just last week at a U.S. India Chamber of Commerce AI tech event, because it was here in Dallas, and heard from NVIDIA, heard from Amazon, and really kind of looking a little bit more deeply about what they're thinking, because that matters a lot. And so that's where I've started feeling like over the last 3 years that, as much as we talk about the AI race, it's really going to be a marathon.
Well, thank you, Peter.
We do have time to get a call in. This is Rick. Rick, good morning. You're on with Jennifer Warren. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Ms. Warren. I've been to two meetings about the Sheep Creek rare earth mine up the West Fork of the Bitterroot here in Montana. And without a doubt, everybody that was there, they had a cell phone in their hand or a laptop or a personal device of some kind that they're protesting technology by using technology. That's how I found out about these meetings was through technology. There's 8.3 million people in the world, and there's more cell phones. There's like 8.8 cell phones in the world. And these people that go to these meetings and then they leave and they use their cell phones to call each other to say, hey, we did a really good job, you know, to protest this. When are they going to realize that they have to change their own lifestyle to actually make a change? If they don't, if they don't want to see rare earth, they have to somehow they have to change their lifestyle completely. And I don't know if we're capable of doing it and running a civil society nowadays. And I'm thinking about the Thacker Pass. I'm sure you've heard of that mine in out of Winnemucca, Nevada. That is a huge, huge, huge mine, and it's has investors from Chevrolet, you know, for the rare earth for the batteries that we're going to see in the future for our cars and so on and so forth. At what point do people realize that for them to enjoy the lifestyle that they're living, they're going to have to give up something, and it's going to be in the environment? That's what it's going to be. It's going to be as simple as that, and it's going to be giving up freedoms for young kids in Africa and Asia that are mining these rare minerals, and we don't see it over our fence, so we don't pay any mind to it. Well, I do. I actually do pay attention to it. So what would you tell those people that are protesting all this but using the technology willy-nilly like they're not part of the problem?
Well, I'll tell you what, Jennifer, if you don't mind, I want to be able to give you a time for a full answer, because that's a very important question.
Okay.
And so we're going to be up against a break here in just less than a minute. So I want to go ahead and let folks know that Jennifer is with us all the way till 10 o'clock this morning, sharing her expertise from Concept Elemental. We're going to answer that question from Rick when we come back from the break. Our numbers, phone lines are open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. You're listening to Talk Back right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls this morning. And we're always privileged to have Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with us. And on the phone right now, all the way from Texas, ladies and gentlemen, is Jennifer Warren. She's with Concept Elemental. We're gonna come right back, and we have more calls with Dave and Susan also standing by right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. A residential neighborhood in Missoula shaking off a close call after a high-speed police chase ended with a patrol car crashing into a house. It happened Sunday night when an officer spotted a vehicle driving erratically near Reserve and South 3rd Street West. When he tried to pull the car over, the driver took off. The pursuing officer lost control at a turn coming off Reserve on England Boulevard, slamming into a house. No one inside the house was hurt. Neither was the officer. The suspect is still on the loose. He was driving a stolen car, and police are hoping that you might have information to help out. Montana seeing a noticeable spike in property crime this year, landing the Treasure State among the top 10 nationwide for the largest increase in break-ins. A new analysis of FBI burglary data compiled by Compare the Market shows that reported burglaries in Montana have jumped 16% compared to last year. Total reports across the state rose from just over 1,000 last year to 1,257 so far this year. Windshield time is a way of life in Montana, but as Tracy Taylor found out, the numbers suggest Montana drivers are spending much longer behind the wheel than you might expect, and our roads are also in better shape than you might think.
A new report shows Montana drivers spend more time on the road than most Americans, averaging more than 33 vehicle miles a day compared to the national average of about 26. Researchers also found nearly 66% of Montana's major roads are considered to be in good condition, while about 29% are rated fair. Nationally, highway and street construction spending has climbed nearly 25% in recent years, reaching close to $150 billion annually. Tracy Taylor, Montana State News Network.
With just a week away until Montana's primary election, state officials reminding absentee voters to get their ballots in the mail immediately. Actually, yesterday was the best deadline from the U.S. Postal Service to make sure those arrived by Tuesday, May 26. They have to guarantee they arrive by 8 p.m. Election Day. So far, nearly 125,000 absentee ballots have been received statewide. This is the Montana State News Network.
Every act of change begins with a neighbor, with someone saying,
"We take care of each other here.
In food banks and food pantries, neighbors pack fresh food and dignity into every box, moving food from farms to families through Feeding America's nationwide network. So when that box reaches a home, it carries more than food. It carries a promise that together we can end hunger. Feeding America, led by neighbors. Take action to end hunger now at feedingamerica.org.
Elena had another asthma attack. She's really sad to miss school again.
Asthma can be triggered by allergens from common pests.
I just can't shake this fever.
Mosquito bites can cause West Nile and Zika virus infections.
Sorry, boss. I'm going to be out of work for a while.
The CDC estimates that more than 300,000 Lyme disease cases spread by ticks occur in the U.S. each year. Don't let pests force you to take a sick day. Learn how to protect your family at pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the CDC.
Okay, we are back. This is Talk Back. Glad to have you along this morning. Bob Seidenschwartz here with us, the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Jennifer Warren from Concept Elemental is on the phone with us right now, and we do have folks waiting to visit with you. But
she
please,
has
please
a question
ahead.
That she wants to answer for
yes,
Rick.
Yes, please go ahead. Jennifer.
Okay, so the question you're asking in a big picture way is exactly the work I do. And I kind of gave this talk that what you're saying back in 24 at University of Montana, Missoula, and there's actually a video of that talk. But what I want to say is really what you're talking about is the hypocrisy of protesting and, you know, that sort of thing. And yeah, absolutely, I believe in freedom of speech and all that. Love everything about our democracy sometimes. But that the hypocrisy you're talking about is real. And what it really gets at, too, is first resource utilization and wise use of resources. And I think that's really one of the key. If there's anything I think about a lot, it's resource efficiency, because I have an energy background and I see what's going to be needed for this build out ahead and currently as we increase our digital infrastructure. I mean, that's just part and parcel of the same thing as a data center. And, you know, in the United States, we're the largest market. We are growing faster than anyone. We do have a lot of energy resources, which is the good news. And the mix is going to be evolving over time based on, you know, what grid you're connected to and what resources are available. But what I think is it's going to be a really exciting time in energy, because I think there's going to be a lot of creativity and entrepreneurialism having to be applied to meet this demand and to you know, be in this growing digital economy. And it is happening around the world, too. Asia is a big market for the growth of the digital economy, cloud computing, all that, as you mentioned. So yeah, I mean, I can't speak to those protesting, and that's their job and whatever. But I can speak to that. I think we're trying to do things differently. I think that's what a lot of this moving some supply chains back to the United States is about. And while people don't love mining, if you're going to move those supply chains back, you're going to be doing more mining. And I think if anything, this is going to give rise to, you know, just better technology to do things more cleanly, because we're going to have to be more efficient. And also, I just want to mention that there are two features that I think are really good background as to what you're talking about. So in 2024, I wrote this feature called The Long Runway of New Energy Demand, and I interviewed Andy Power, the CEO of Digital Realty. And this is really before anybody was really talking about this. And I asked him about, you know, what does a technologist think about hooking up to energy? And this is like a totally new conversation. And I really looked at where this disruption in energy demand is coming from. I looked at the data center and the data center demand. And I will do a page on my website that will have some of these accessible. And then just last year, I wrote an article called The New Barons, The New Energy Barons. And that was about how we're going to meet this demand. And it's a Texas story, but it's a U.S. story, because I interviewed Jim Burke, the CEO of Vistra, who is, you know, national, a power provider, making electrons for us. And I talked to a midstream firm, moving that gas from, the Permian to where it's got to be processed to get to demand centers. And so I've been talking to the people doing this. And one thing that's interesting about the Burke article in The New Barons was, this is really, I got him to tell me, how does he see this playing out in Texas? Because we are going to have a ton of data centers. In fact, we're going to be potentially eclipsing Virginia at some point, which is the most data center density in the world, actually. It's coming here because we have the land, we have the energy resources, we have the environment that's welcoming to data center development. But there is pushback because, there has to be, and then I think that's the natural tension of this, that slows things down a little bit so people can take a breath. And I think the capital markets are doing that as well, kind of being more discerning about, okay, what is this demand looking like? What's real? And that's really what I write about in a nutshell. How do you use resources most efficiently? And what is this demand looking like? What's it for? Where are we going? How do we think about this?
So there's so much going on, and we're less than a minute away from a break. So I want to just say that I want to say thank you to Dave and Susan and Jeff. Callers will be waiting to visit with you, Jennifer. And we really, first of all, we appreciate you being with us. But even more than that, we appreciate you taking calls from our listeners who genuinely want to learn more about what you're doing. And you're opening up new vistas and worlds for us. So every time you come on, and we appreciate Bob bringing you on. We appreciate it very much. We're going to come right back. Our telephone number is 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. The Montana World Affairs Council with Bob Seidenschwartz and, of course, special guest Jennifer Warren, Concept Elemental, when we return right after this quick timeout on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Stay with us. Support for Talk.
You've been diagnosed with COPD, but breathing is getting harder. Everyday activities take more effort, and life feels smaller. Is this you? If your COPD is getting worse, there are options to help you breathe easier. Learn more at isthisyoucopd.org.
Hey, we are back. This is Talk Back for Wednesday, May 27th. Peter Christian, Nick Christensen with you, and Bob Seidenschwartz. Go ahead, Bob.
What an appropriate song.
Yes.
Come on, baby. Light that fire. Or as Ed Sullivan said, can't say that on the...
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Go ahead, folks.
Jennifer Warren joining us on the phone, Concept Elemental. We have lots of folks waiting on the phone to visit with you. Dave is up first. Dave, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I have a question, but first a comment. There's a lot of belief out there that when Joe Biden was president, he was anti-oil and that there was less production during his presidency. That's not true. During his presidency, they set records for production. But on to the question about wind generators. Now, I've heard a lot of pros and cons about wind generation. Is it a fad? Is wind generation a fad and is going to go away? And natural gas, is that what's going to make the electricity and all the pipelines? Or is it going to be coal to produce, to run those data centers? I'm just curious, what's going on there?
Okay. Yeah, so what I can say about wind, because actually Texas has one of the largest wind capacities of all states. And we have a really balanced energy mix between renewables, you know, wind, solar, and gas, and a little bit of coal, less than 10%, and then 10% nuclear. But what I can say is, you know, wind's not going away. I know some of the incentives in what the Biden legislation that passed was the IRA. It's not growing as much as solar. There's been a lot of incentives for solar, so there was a lot of incentives to build solar, and so all that still has to get hooked up. And gas, absolutely. Natural gas is what grows a lot. And in that, the new Texas energy barons, I talk about gas demand more there. I also talk about gas demand in the long run, like for new energy demand. And absolutely, gas is going to be required because you need stable baseload. Wind and solar are intermittent, and that can stress the grid out and cause all sorts of things. And so I've had to look at, you know, also just how, you know, how the grids are in different places. I'm not an expert on grids, but I'm pretty versed on the Texas grid because we have our own grid. And so I've had a natural place to kind of study this demand. And so Texas is really a good kind of example of what's happening ahead. In Virginia, in the whole PJM grid, which is huge, that's also kind of a sign of the times, and gas is expected to grow, as is solar there. So it depends on if you have wind resources available as to whether you use them or not and whether they are developed. So that's the other simple answer I would give.
And Jennifer, I think it's also true that while wind may not be necessarily growing at the rate that you describe with other sources, having a diversified portfolio within the United States is not only strategic, but it's also innovative in many respects, too. So it serves a multitude of purposes.
All right, let's
get... Okay.
Let's get another call on before we take a break. Susan, good morning. You're on with Jennifer Warren. Go ahead.
Well, we have a primary coming up on Tuesday, and if people care about energy in the state of Montana, because we are called the treasure state because of our natural resource treasures, I'm actually calling to remind people to get out to vote, and it is too late to mail your ballots. And in Missoula alone, there were more than 63,000 potential voters just in Missoula, and at this point only 14,600 people have turned in their ballots. So if you care about energy, and I do, and I am a Republican, I hope people will get out and vote by walking their ballot in today or Monday to the election office, wherever you are in the state of Montana.
All right, Susan, thanks for the call.
That's the reason I called.
Okay, thanks for the call. Any response to that, Jennifer?
This isn't really a political discussion, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, voting is important. Get out to vote. I completely concur with that. You know, express your rights.
We're going to come right back after a quick timeout, and we've got more calls waiting for you. Jeff and Joe are both standing by. We appreciate you taking the calls from our listeners this morning. Phone lines are open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We're going to come right back after this.
Severe flooding leaves cars unsafe to drive, and some vehicles end up for sale with no indication they were in a flood. Use NICB's free online VIN check service to help ensure a car is in its promised condition. To report fraud, contact NICB at reportinsurancefraud.org. A public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
We are back. This is Talk Back. Glad to have you along this morning. And Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. And our special guest from Concept Elemental is Jennifer Warren.
So, Jennifer, question that I'm always vexed by. Are the masters of the universe, where are they taking us with all of this technology and demand that we keep referencing, that we need ever more power generation? Where is this coming from? And to my question, who's taking us down this road?
Yeah, so in terms of what is driving demand, so I, again, in the long runway for new energy demand, it was keyed up initially there. But I did deeper dives about this in a feature called the Really Wild AI Ride, which came out in March of 2025, and that's where I toured Montana and talked about it. And basically, there's a couple of things. There's increased digitalization. You know, we're doing, you know, more businesses are online. They have online presences. Cloud computing, you know, think about your backup for your iPhone. Businesses use a lot of cloud. That's continuing to grow, and that has grown with the digital economy. I mean, really, you saw these ramp ups, I would say, in sort of like more data centers, really starting in 2014-ish. That's when I think things started really increasing. And some of this has to do with the more data you're creating, you need to have the place to put the data, right? And so that's what cloud computing is about. That's what and also on business premises, they call it on-prem. They'll have their own, you know, backup storage and all that. And then you layer on some of the AI infrastructure, which is just really high-performance computing, if you think of it that way, you know, denser, more capable computing. And that's what a lot of this, what is happening, that's where a lot of this new, some of this new demand is coming, is because, you know, the models like Gemini and Claude, Anthropic, OpenAI, which is ChatGPT, those use a lot more data. And so as we use more AI to do things, that too will create more data and therefore more demand for the data center. So we're driving it and they're responding. Now, is there marketing going on? Is there an encouragement? Is there? Sure. You know, but we're drinking the Kool-Aid too.
Yes.
So, well, and let's respond to some of callers right now, yes, too, that have questions for you.
We got them stacked up here. So Tom is first. Tom, good morning. Okay. You're on with Jennifer Warren. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. My question has to do, and Peter, you can confirm this. If you look at your power bill, it costs as much to get electricity to your house as it does to generate the electricity. So half of the cost that you're paying in your bill is getting the electricity to where you are. Okay, when we look at these data centers, we need to look at the possibility of having electrical generation locally for those. And I'm just wondering if they're looking at options like that. Another option that you haven't talked about that has been available since the 1960s is fuel cell generation of electricity. So just throwing some thoughts on.
All right. Thanks for the call. Jennifer, your thoughts.
Okay. So, yeah, on the transmission and distribution part of the bill, that's what you were kind of talking about. It varies based on where you live very much. You probably have higher costs in Montana because you've got all these spaces. And in Texas, it's not like that to that degree. Necessarily, so that's kind of that split. And then as to energy mix sources, even like nuclear and various forms of nuclear, small modular reactors, micro reactors, all this is going to be happening over time. And, you know, there's a lot of clean sources that are going to be coming online for sure. What you mentioned, yes. Because that's one thing, you know, the hyperscalers, you know, the Googles, the Metas, they all had these net zero, you know, goals. And some of those are being rolled back a little bit because of, you know, realizing that, yeah, you're going to have to use more natural gas and you're going to have, you know, you can't do it all with renewables. And there's not enough nuclear at this point. You know, nuclear makes up like 10% of the whole United States mix. That will increase over time, but it's going to be like I've heard 5 years even before SMRs are really kind of starting to emerge. So some of those sources are going to be 5 years out. And so it's these next five, I think, that are kind of critical. But I know that there is this awareness, and, you know, the hyperscalers came out with this pledge that, you know, when they build, like some of them, when they build these big, large campuses, that they're, you know, they're paying the bills for the infrastructure and the costs. Now, is that going to trickle back into, you know, what we're paying ultimately some other way? Probably.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so you know, we're getting what we pay for, but I think there is going to be more. There is more push also to do all this more cleanly, even with gas. I mean, there's a lot of technology to capture carbon and emissions from gas generation that's happening with a firm called Net Power. You know, so I think there is a lot of cracking the code to do this all more cleanly, but you also have to be efficient with the resources. And we have a lot of gas, and it's cheap. That is our one big strength that we have over all most economies around the world, is that we have this gas resource. We have a lot of it. We can produce it cheaply. We have the infrastructure. And I really think that that's part of why we are able to leverage it and grow this digitalization like we have been able to. And some of that's because of the shale boom, frankly.
You bet.
And our renewables kind of boom. Yeah.
Okay, we are coming up against a break, and the phone lines are jammed, and we're running out of time. That's the unfortunate part with Jennifer Warren from Concept Elemental. Jeff, Joe, and Catherine will do our best to get your calls in when we come back from the break. Phone lines, of course, 406-721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. And again, we appreciate Jennifer and, of course, Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council sharing your expertise and answering all these great questions. We're going to come right back, right after this.
Hello.
Hey, it's Peter Chris. Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back, and getting into our final segment now with Jennifer Warren, Concept Elemental, and of course Bob Seidenschwartz joining us here in the studio this morning. And let's get Jeff on the line. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Jennifer Warren. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Montana. Good morning, Jennifer. Welcome to the statewide Talk Back. It's reaching our tremendous 1.2 million residents. You said earlier on you were talking about data centers, and just before you were on the guest in the previous hour, Robert Rice has talked about data centers and windmills. I believe he has a windmill rejection database that has over 1,200 windmill projects that have been rejected. I'm looking at the database rejection or the data center rejection database right now, and he documents 205 data centers that have been rejected. And of those, 162 or 80% are in the United States. Only 43 or about 20% are outside the United States. And I was wondering, that's my first question, if you could talk to why they're being rejected. All it says here is moratorium on the vast majority of them. But I'm not really sure what that means. And then also, you were talking about mining and minerals, rare earth and otherwise. I mean, copper we're going to need a lot of, and that's by no means a rare earth element. But right now, for example, there's a lot of desalinization that goes on that generates brine, the residue left behind from the seawater. And in that brine is every element on the face of the earth. We just have to figure out ways to get it out. And do you know have you looked at or talked to people about how to mine things like brine or maybe even the water that's in the Berkeley Pit in Butte to get the minerals and metals and things that we need out of it?
Interesting.
Yeah, so, okay, thanks, to your question, so on the brine question, yeah, I was at a conference in February, and there was actually a whole panel about, and it was these oil and gas producers from the Permian, and because they get all the brine water from, you know, from fracking. And so, yeah, there is absolutely firms looking at that, how to extract lithium and different mineral streams and all that. So that's happening, and that's a big deal. And the thing you mentioned about, you know, cancellations, rejection about data centers, still that's, there's so many that, like applications get scattered all throughout, you know, wherever a data center developer would want to be. And sometimes they'll put in, you know, multiple applications in the same queue. And in Texas, we have a huge queue. And we have huge demand coming up. It's really insane. But what I can tell you right now is from this data center report is that right now we have like in the Americas 43 gigawatts operational, under construction 25 gigawatts, planned almost 200. So the plan of that type of number, if even 50% gets built, that would be surprising. You know, so there is that fat in some of that. And yeah, there are some of these moratoriums. And even something I saw like in March saying that there were like zero data centers, you know, being built or whatever planned in Montana. And you guys just cited 11, you know, so the moratoriums haven't necessarily, and the bans haven't all been passed yet. So that's kind of a signal, right? Political signal. Still, these are going to get built. They're going to get built where they can get built. And so either you're a market or not, and there's a lot of variables that go into being a good market. Dallas, Texas, we have like, we're the top primary, secondary, and tertiary markets. There's a lot of growth in these tertiary markets, which include like Cheyenne and Houston, Tulsa, the Dakotas, Central Washington. And so you see this kind of spreading out as well from primary markets. And in Montana, you know, you're gonna need cloud computing. There's going to be high performance computing. So that's actually a digitalization need, right?
Jennifer.
So it's going to go where the demand is, right?
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. We appreciate it. And look forward to our next visit. There's never enough time, and we appreciate your time, ma'am.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Nick.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Again, thanks to Bob Seidenschwartz for being with us today. Nick, what's coming up on tomorrow's show, sir?
We will have open phones for the first hour, 8 to 9, and then 9 to 10, it'll be Dr. John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center.
All right, and again, thank you all for joining us this morning, and a big thank you to Jennifer Warren for sharing her expertise with us. And Bob Seidenschwartz, always a pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
Gentlemen, thank you, and appreciate the audience and the calls.
You bet. And anything new in your world? We got about 30 seconds.
You know, what's new is I'm looking forward to developing and working with you guys in terms of bringing type of guests that we just experienced today as the world continues to unfold, because we're just getting started with some of the issues we brought up today.
You bet. All right, we're looking forward to that, and then tomorrow's show as well with Dr. John Lott, but it will have open phones for the first hour. So if you've been hungering for that will be available to you. And again, a big thank you to everyone who called in this morning. We appreciate all of our listeners, especially the ones that are brand new joining us on the eastern side of the state as we've expanded our coverage, the Montana Talks Radio Network. Get out there and make it a great day. We appreciate each and every one of you. We hope that you have a great day, and we will see you tomorrow morning, bright and early at 8 o'clock right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network.